AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 38 for Thursday, January 14, 2010. Detroit's Mojo Rising. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for AutoLine After Hours at the iTunes Store. And here we are, another edition of AutoLine After Hours. And as I always start out every show saying, with me again is Mr. Auto Extremist.
John, good to be here.
Renzo, Peter DeLorenzo. Great having you here, Peter.
Great to be here.
We'll get to it in a minute, but I especially want to get to your rant today. And also joining us right now is Don Runkel, former General Motors executive, former Delphi executive, and now with a company called Eco Motors. But great having you here with us.
Great to be here.
Good AutoLine After Hours.
All of you, as always. So it's great to be here. Don's the guy that made me famous.
Yeah. No, I didn't make you famous. You did that yourself. But let's go back to Peter's rant, and then we'll get into a bit more of you, Don. But you didn't seem to like the Detroit Auto Show all that much,
well,
Peter.
I just thought it was sleepy. You know, let's face it, the last great Detroit Auto Show was the year they introduced the 16 and
the Cadillac 16.
It was like dueling concepts. You'd run across the hall and you'd be wowed by something and then wowed by something else. And then they pulled the wraps off the 16 and you're just like, but it was a good show, a good quality show, but it just seemed quiet.
It not up to the pizzazz, just the kapow,
I mean,
power.
GM's display was better this year than last. Last was like an indoor showroom with indoor-outdoor carpeting, and that was it. So they had some good stuff. You know, it just felt a little quiet, but
There's some good stuff. I learned a lot there, and I hear what you're saying. You know, there wasn't a plethora of concepts. There were very few concepts.
Very few.
Really?
Yeah,
I haven't
very
been down. I'll be down tomorrow night.
But what they showed, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I called the Cadillac XTS my best in show.
I would agree with you.
And the
designers don't agree with us, but what do they know?
Well, when I was standing next to Ed Welburn, there was a parade of designers from other car companies saying, boy, this is nice.
But they chose the GMC Granite.
I know. That was, you're talking about that design award.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that at all. I like the Granite.
Mm-hmm. The Granite looked great.
Yeah, the Granite and the Aveo look great. But I thought the Cadillac was just every bit what the Cadillac should be. Was real pleasing to see. I saw it last summer, and I was impressed, but it looked even... They tweaked it even more.
Well, seeing it out on the floor where you can sort of judge by looking at other cars, and then you look at that thing.
Yeah, and I the Internet's good and bad for a lot of reasons. You know, I had people writing me today say, well, it looks just like a Taurus. Please, people.
No.
Wait till you see this stuff in the flesh before you start saying thing. It looks just like a Taurus because, you know, that's irrelevant. You know, it's not. The Audi e-tron was really good. Loved mm-hmm. that little thing.
Well, what I was surprised by the e-tron, because I hadn't... Here we've got the Cadillac okay. XTS up on the screen right now. And, you know, I called it a car of heroic proportions, and then some of the viewers wrote in and said, what, are you crazy? I mean, it's only got a 111-inch wheelbase. You know, if you want to talk heroic proportions, it's got to be 120-inch wheelbase or more. And I would agree with that. But all I'd say is after looking at all these A and B class cars and then you hit the XTS, yeah. It's like, wow,
do we really
here's
know?
A real car again.
But we don't really know what the final wheelbase will be. You know, they could do all kinds of things.
They could do whatever they want,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, concept cars, you always push the wheels out there. So,
so Don, you did a lot of concept cars in your time at GM, right?
Hundreds of them. So,
so what's the value in doing a concept car?
I think, you know, it's good for design and engineering. It sort of allows your designers and allows your engineering people to really push the envelope. And typically we would pick some theme, whether it was going to be an electric car when we did the Impact or the HX3 hybrids, ultralight, and so forth. And all of that is pick a theme, high fuel economy, high performance when we did the CERV, if you remember that.
I remember the CERV.
That. And it allows you to just let it all hang out, so to speak, with the CERV when we
which was what,
that.
Corvette Experimental Research Vehicle? Do I remember that correctly or no?
No, we changed the name to Corporate Experimental Research
Vehicle. It wasn't what
the original one was. CERV 1, of course, was which
Duntoff
did,
right?
And CERV 2 he
wasn't
did.
Wasn't that Chevrolet Engineering Research Vehicle back in the old days?
In the old days, right.
Yeah.
And CERV 1 and 2.
In Zora's day.
Yeah. And so then I was there, so we said, let's do a new one. And so we had the ZR1 engine, so we did a twin-turbo ZR1, 800 horsepower. We did.
It was a beautiful car.
Active suspension, so at the time we had Lotus in there, so we put a full active suspension on it, did all carbon fiber body, and then we did, you know, four-wheel drive with that kind of horsepower. And the brakes were a work of art in themselves, you know, twin rotors, carbon fiber, with inboard calipers instead of outboard, so you get.
And what year is this?
90, 91, something like that.
Wow.
Should we remind the viewers who Don is?
Yeah, well, we will, but first we're going to say, hey, David Welch, welcome aboard, man.
Good to see you.
Glad you showed up.
Good to see you.
I'm back.
Yes,
I'm
you
late.
Are. All right.
Hey, puppy.
Back from where?
I think I missed the last episode.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah.
Back
to the show. Good.
2 week hiatus.
Good.
But yeah, go back. I think when I first met you, you were in Chevrolet Engine Engineering. Is that right?
I don't know. I might have been. I don't know. I was chief engineer of the Camaro when we did the car of the year. 82, and then I went to Buick for a while as chief engine engineer.
Maybe that's
and,
what I was thinking.
That
of.
Was
engine engineer,
engine
right?
Engineer, and so we revamped the entire V6 line. Then I went back as chief engineer of Chevrolet. I think that's when I don't know if you were started following some of the concept vehicles that came out there, then into advanced engineering at. What was it? CPC, whatever that name was. A country, a city, and a car. And then I became head of advanced engineering for GM. That was a VP level job. So in there was a lot of concept vehicles that came out of.
A lot of racing stuff too. Didn't you get involved with
racing.
Penske and doing the stock block Indy?
We didn't do the stock block because I was doing the stock block at Buick. When we put the Buick on the pole at Indy, and that's when I met Roger. Actually, I was always an icon in my life. But
you
I remember
did the Chevy Indy V8.
But the way it led up to that, we put the Buick on the pole, and he came up to me down there. He says, "You know, you're making us look bad down here because you know your engine can't go 500 miles." I says, you know, Roger, you're right. We actually can't go 500 miles, but we're going to look strong on pole day because we got about 100 horsepower more than the Cosworths. So he says, you know, someday we ought to get together and do a real racing engine. And then it was like a year and a half later, he brought in the opportunity to GM, and
Gilmore.
Bob Stemple was at the time. And he says, get down there and figure this out with Roger. So we put together the Gilmore company, and Chevy won 25%, or not, Chevy owned 25%, so did Roger, and then Mario Illion and Paul Morgan, who has now passed away, owned the other half of it.
And they were the guys that were with Cosworth.
They came out of Cosworth,
yeah.
And Mario is just a brilliant, brilliant engine designer. Never seen anything like it. The guy just sits down at the drafting table and draws a first-class race engine. And so we own partial ownership of Gilmore, and then we branded it as a Chevy Indy V8.
Now they're making Honda Indy
engines.
Yeah,
I know, right.
Right over here in Plymouth.
It took us 3 years to win the Indy 500, but then we never lost a race after that. So it was good.
Did any of that engine and technology ever get into a production car after that?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Obviously, in racing, obviously the place where racing really meant a lot was in the Corvette program where we did the showroom stock. And much of that stuff does end up in the car. When you're talking about, like, in kart, Formula One, those sort of things, you know, maybe engine management stuff, sometimes turbo technologies and things like that. A flat-out race engine, like we did the one of the concept cars, we put the Indy engine in. But, I mean, they're so outrageous, they just don't translate into a production sort of car.
The Corvette program today, though.
Corvette program.
It does translate.
In the American Le Mans.
Yeah, I think the showroom stock program of those days immensely helped the Vette to be still the bargain performance car out there. And so lots
of
concept
cars. Concept car that I absolutely love. If I remember it right, it was called the Chevy Express.
Oh, yeah, the gas turbine.
The gas turbine that was designed to go 150 miles an hour.
Yeah, my idea there was let's be able to drive a car from your home and go down to I-94, plug into a limited access in the median where there's nothing else going on anyway. Limited access.
And when you say plug in, you don't mean electric
plug in.
No, just drive in.
Get on limited access and into a 150 mile an hour limited access so people aren't pulling out in front of you, and then show up in Chicago and then drive to your hotel. You don't lose your luggage. You're down there in half the time that it takes to fly, which is really a four-hour trip by the time you get
parking,
to the airport,
security,
pull around, and all that stuff. You know, you know, it's better to, you know, driving and flying to Chicago is about the same time. It's sort of a four-hour exercise. So we did the Chevy Express in the California studios, actually, with Hank Haga. And we had a gas turbine engine at the time. So we put the gas turbine in there and some virtual aerodynamics to make the tail about 10 feet longer than it actually was there. So we had some really extraordinary. I remember a great story on that. I was up at MIT recruiting, and Gary Kauger, who you know, was with me. He worked with me at the time at Advanced Engineering. So we had a whole bunch of concept cars up there. So we after recruiting was over, I looked at one of the mechanics. I says, "Hey, we're going to take the Express to dinner tonight." So, you know, he goes, because these guys know, you know, these things go about 10 feet.
Yeah.
So I said, "Where's the keys?" He said, "Take the keys." So Gary and his wife and my wife jumped in the car, and we were driving up Memorial Drive up to, I don't know, the Hyatt or some place up the street. We couldn't go too far away because it didn't have a great turning radius. And you remember it had the skirts in the front that popped out.
Yeah.
So we get up and we pull up to the Hyatt to valet parking. And as you recall, it had this canopy that would come up in the back, and then it had the suicide doors that popped open like this. And the guy came over and he looked down and he says, "Are you guys from outer space?" And he never moved it. He just had it sit there. So,
Think we got to push to 150 mile an hour speed.
Oh, absolutely. We're the only generation that's ever gone slower than the past generation.
Right.
Slower airplanes, slower cars.
Well, you know, I wanted to be Secretary of Transportation, but I didn't get the call.
Yeah, but you should have
made me do that. My record to Chicago, by the way, is 3 hours and 40 minutes.
That's pretty. Can be enforced if you're the Secretary of Transportation.
Well, no, we would have.
3 hours and 40 minutes from here?
Yeah.
That's honking.
Yeah, it was honking. That was hell-bent.
You must have been going about 100.
Yeah, you have to.
Right in there.
If you make it that in that time, you pretty much have to be right around 100 and for long periods.
Because it's not hard to get to Chicago in 2 hours. It's after you hit Chicago. Yeah. It takes another 2 hours.
I've made it in a little over four, and it was
4 hours.
It was hauling and really watching.
You got to be on there.
And plus, you know, it's a high stress thing.
Yes, it is.
Because you're watching for other drivers, and you're watching for cops, and boy, by the time you get there, it's just like
you're wrung out.
Have a martini and call it a day.
But you're there ahead of time, so you can do it.
So, Don, tell us about this new engine that you're working on at Eco Motors, because this thing really is revolutionary.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a, the way I like to think of it is it's a new architecture for a reciprocating engine. So it has a opposed pistons.
Here, we got it up on the screen now.
And opposed cylinders. So it has, you know, there's four pistons in there. And if you keep running it, you'll see they come together. There's been opposed piston engines down through the ages. There was an engine called the Junkers in the
German bomber.
The Luftwaffe used to run it because it had high energy or high efficiency and pretty high power. And it fires every stroke. It has high scavenging efficiency, which two strokes do not have. And this has approaches four-stroke scavenging efficiency, which is sort of the efficiency of cleaning out the combustion chamber after the after combustion. It's perfectly balanced, which is a big deal because we can stack these together and put one, two, three modules. We've even simulated a four-module combination. So that allows you to then have really modular displacement. So when we can run a flat a two-module system that when they're both running, it would sound like an eight-cylinder engine. They're firing at that frequency. But we can run the entire EPA city cycle, the entire EPA highway cycle, and this is how it works right here.
This is like two engines together.
It's two of our modules, and there's a clutch. The blue thing in the middle of the two engines is an electric clutch. And so we can run the schedule with only one engine. And like driving down here tonight, you know, I got a 400-horsepower BMW, but I'm sure I did not get into the second engine coming down here tonight.
Yeah.
You know, it was a 200-horsepower night, right? So you just came down, and so you can run the entire schedule. And that is about 30%. Higher fuel economy.
Because you don't have any pumping loss.
You don't have anything. The other engine's off. It never starts. And the only time it starts is when you need more than 200 horsepower. Or, I mean, we could do 200s or 250s or
275s.
Yeah, we right now we have a 300 horsepower single module diesel engine running. And it was done with DARPA money. They wanted an engine to replace the gas turbine on drone helicopters. And we proved that this system works for that. And they wanted a dual-module thing to, you know, you need two modules to get off the ground and get up there. But then you want to park at 35,000 feet and stay there for 3 days and watch the bad guys. And that's cheaper than launching a satellite to watch the bad guys. And so it's a very innovative system.
Is it expensive?
Right now, the cost studies we did shows that it's about 20 to 25% lower cost than a comparable power engine. And keep in mind, we're pushing up against about 1 horsepower per pound. And if you compared this diesel that we have running, about 300 horsepower, weighs about 340 pounds. Now, a world-class over-the-road truck engine that has 275 horsepower, you know, a Cummins or a Cat, would weigh 1,300 pounds. So this is a remarkable
1,000 pounds lighter for the same output.
So it's lightweight, more compact, more efficient.
Yeah, so we basically have a lower cost approach. It is fundamentally about 15% more efficient on a single module. Dual modules is about 45% more efficient because you don't run that. It is half the size. It is half the weight, has less than half the parts. And the investment, if you were going to be an OE and you're going to tool it up, because, you know, they would get into that, looks like about a 30% less tooling cost.
Wow.
So that's why I join.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear all good things, you say, well, if it sounds too good to be true, it's probably not true. So I did a little due diligence on the engine. But it's very
exciting.
But also
talk about the guy who designed it, because I think that is key, too.
And the guy that designed it is Peter Huffbauer. So, I mean, he was head of Volkswagen powertrain for at least 20 years. That's when I knew him. He is really the father of the high-speed diesel engine, the TDI, that really led out there. And basically the high-speed diesel engines that are out there today, you know, 50%, you know, is that sort of architecture.
Well, what are the hurdles to doing this engine then?
Well, obviously, it fires every stroke. So, I mean, some people would call it a two-stroke. We call it a direct gas exchange because two strokes, you know, fundamentally had some issues. And, you know, I'm the guy that bought the license from Orbital to run the two-stroke, which, you know, at the end of the day didn't work. But
high,
you know,
emissions
you
being
would,
one of
you
them.
You would like to have two strokes if you engines ought to be that way. But the scavenging efficiency, that is how do you cleanse the combustion chamber after the combustion, four-stroke engines are about 95% scavenging efficiency, 95 to 98. So that's good, and that's why you see them. Two-strokes, conventional two-strokes, are about 55% scavenging efficiency. That's why you don't see any of them. They don't even have them in motorcycles anymore. Ours runs at 90% scavenging efficiency. We have an electric turbo, so we can boost this engine when it's not running. We have asymmetrical port timing, circumferential ports, and so the technology now that is in the combustion chamber, we have the injectors, the high-speed computer capability that exists today in power electronics is all new stuff that exists over the last 10 years, and that's allowed us to get the emissions and the fuel economy and that sort of stuff. So right now we are through Series A. We're venture capital backed by Khosla Ventures, Vinod Khosla. He's the guy that has sponsored this with money. We're at the conclusion of Series A. Now we've sort of proven that, hey, we have a path to emissions, have a path to efficiency. We know we can pull the horsepower. We're saying, you know, close to this one horsepower per pound, which is...
And you know that because you've built engines.
Yeah, we got running engines.
In fact, you guys showed me one running here at Jack Roush's place.
And that was a diesel. We got, you know, gas engines on the board. It's scalable. So, you know, I have what I call my 10-kilowatt briefcase. I have an opposed piston engine. I would say it's about that big.
And about that big being, what, about a foot long?
Yeah, I have it with a ruler down there, and it's about a foot long, and it's got a 30-millimeter bore, and, you know, it's an opposed pistons. This is about a 15-horsepower engine. It's about, a 10-kilowatt, and it's in a briefcase and got a little generator and a starter motor and runs on JP8.
And just so anybody knows, my house, if I had to run my house on something, it would take, I figured it out for my house, I could probably do 7 kilowatts.
Yeah, 7, something.
So
like
you got a briefcase that'll do 10.
A briefcase, something like that. It's it's about that size. So it's scalable. You know, this is the 15 horsepower. We got a 300 horsepower running. I mean, there's no reason not to have a 500 horsepower.
Okay, so ding, ding, ding. So done. One of my favorite things, Crusades, actually, because I do a motorsports com and part of Auto Extremist, but to get the Indianapolis Motor Speedway back to the where it was a place to prove new technology.
Yeah.
And they're formulating their next package of rules.
Hmm.
And I would think, you were just talking about Roger before the show, I would be picking up the phone and we should all go have drinks and say, I would love to see that engine at the Speedway.
Well, we're doing our development work out at Roush. So you know, before I joined this company, I mean, Roush was the evil empire, right? I mean,
because that was Ford.
That's on the other side.
Yeah,
of the track.
Well, tell the other evil guy working for you.
John
Paletti
is our
Paletti works for you?
Chief operating officer. So John and I used to race.
So
against
think about that. Here's a guy who, you know, bleeds Chevrolet, and Paletti bleeds Ford, and now they're
Volkswagen
working together. And that Volkswagen,
so
who you both hated equally.
What's interesting too is you got, you know, guys like you and Coletti who used to do horsepower and.
Horsepower.
Now you're trying to do, you know, cleaner, more efficient engines.
Yeah.
You know, like, what's his name? He used to be at ASC doing hot rods. Is now at Aptera.
Paul Wilbur.
Paul Wilbur.
Wilbur, yeah. Yeah.
So all the gearheads are now becoming, you know, green.
And keep in mind, our power density is 2X. So we really, at the end of the day, it is power. You know, 2X, meaning we have twice the horsepower per pound, twice the horsepower per package size of conventional architecture engines. So that's what's exciting. And yeah, you know, I'm from the advanced area, so you rarely find higher efficiency at lower cost. So I mean, you know, fuel cells.
Well, that's why in 100 years of the automobile, as you know, Three engines have ever made it into high volume production: the gasoline piston engine, the diesel engine, and the Wankel. And the Wankel really hasn't gone much
of
anywhere.
But the Wankel's a failure. I mean, at the end of the day, there's only one out there,
the Mazda
and the Mazda one. And we all bought the license. GM bought the license. We spent $250 million getting tooled up. At the end of the day, it has fatal flaws. Engine guys know what they are, and it obviously doesn't work.
Or everyone
GM
would use
have
it.
A rotary engine. Ford would have done the rotary engine.
I know.
We all bought the. We all drank the Kool-Aid.
Well, they're fun to drive though when they do work.
Ed Cole, you know, Ed Cole beat the thing to death. I mean, you guys, General Motors spent hours and effort and all kinds of stuff.
Listen, it was when I first
got. My patent is on mounting the rotary engine in the Monza. So I know about rotaries. Yeah.
In fact, not only that, General Motors tooled it all up. Literally had them going down the line.
Yeah, we were halfway into production when I remember the day the guy came in and says, "Man, we got a 10-gram engine in a 1-gram world on hydrocarbons, and it's not going to work." At the end of the day, it just will not fly for the emission future emission.
I think you got to race it.
But Jack, I brought up Jack. He wants to go to Le Mans, so he said that
would work too.
That would
work both.
That'd be great.
But to David's question,
sounds fantastic. Is there an auto company who's interested? And if there isn't, why hasn't a company said to you, "John, we need to buy this. It's fabulous."
Yeah, I'd say we have. We're in discussions with 15 different OEs, and all will have varying degrees of interest in this. And these are not just, you know, commercial vehicles, car companies, trucks, and also not just automotive, because basically we have an architecture that applies to all reciprocating engines. It's a better mousetrap. So my view is all. The new guy on the pinnacle should be the OPOC, O's piston opposed cylinder engine. And so, because it simply is better in all those regards. So far, we're having good dialogues. No one's thrown us out yet. Obviously, depending on that particular OE's experience in their history, if they had two-stroke experience or something like that, they'll have the standard skepticisms. What's your oil consumption? Our oil consumption right now is at or below four-stroke. So we have that under control. Obviously, what's the emissions level? Right now, the measured emissions we have on our engines are in there for the right sort of numbers for the future. If a diesel would be the version, the one you saw was a diesel version, their first question is going to be, what's your NOx? We have a philosophy of solving NOx inside the combustion chamber without using selective catalyst reduction, which is the non-elegant solution, but the one that many people are using. And we could use that also.
And just to provide a little bit of translation here, for oxides of nitrogen, you don't need BlueTEC.
Yeah, that's, the idea for us.
Honda's engine, by the way, didn't their diesel do it inside the combustion chamber?
Yeah, I think it did.
No, they didn't. Actually, they had a way of absorbing ammonia creating ammonia from chemicals coming out of the gas, combining that to make ammonia, injecting it back into the exhaust stream.
But it was an after-treatment.
It was after-treatment.
Our system is inside.
The they're not going to produce now.
That's right.
Our system is inside the combustion chamber using what's known as excess EGR, and we can keep the combustion temperatures inside the combustion chamber below the temperature at which NOx forms. So that's the idea. That's what's showing up in our.
But the other biggest problem that you have is you take it to any big car company today, and they're going to go, "But Don, we just put $1 billion into our new four-cylinder engine line.
We just got the EcoBoost running, and I mean, it runs great, and all those sort of things." So they'll have to look at it. They'll have to press on it. They'll have to look at the data. They'll have to decide whether,
But what about the Chinese who hasn't paid the $1 billion for their latest engine
line?
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think China and India are very interesting. They're very large markets, really high growth, and they don't have a big infrastructure yet. And they're trying to decide, frankly, what should they do? You know, BYD will say go electric. There's gas, there's diesel, all that sort of stuff. So we're going to, be showing our mousetrap to these guys. And my view is we're the cell phone of engines because, they sort of skipped over wires for phones and went right to cell phones. And why would you want to tool up an engine architecture that's now 100 years old and still the best until we showed up. Still the best. That's why it's up there. So why wouldn't you take a shot at something that can get lower cost, higher efficiency? You know, frankly, it was interesting. I ran some numbers the other day. If everyone was driving my engine in an American car, we would import no oil from the Mideast.
Let's do it.
So, I mean, you don't do that in a second, but over time.
Well, right. The other question, of course, is a new engine program's $1 billion. That's the rule of thumb right now.
Yeah, well, if they are, mine will be $700 million because it's 30% lower. So.
So even the initial investment is 30% less.
Yeah. Yeah, I got half the parts of tool.
Yeah,
I don't have a head gasket. I don't have any head. I don't have any valve train. I don't have any balance shafts. It's perfectly balanced. I got modular displacement. The EPA has always told me modular displacement is the way you ought to go. All of us knew that. We just didn't know how to actually have modular displacement and still have engines that are balanced. This is balanced whether it's running half the engine or the other half, or whether you do one, two, or three. But again, I think the OEs are smart. These are engine guys. They aren't going to buy engines from us. We would look to work with them, design a GM engine or a Ford engine, and
it
license
would be a shame,
our technology.
By the way, if a Chinese or Indian company bought it from you guys first.
I'll show you my Rolodex. So.
Hey, we need to take a quick break here because we've got give props to our sponsor, Dow Automotive Systems, and you can visit their website at DowBetaMate.com. You know, we've talked about a number of the different things that they make. They've got a very clever diesel particulate filter.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
It's based off beer filtration technology. We've talked about their structural foams. Today, I just want to briefly cover their engineering resins, what they call Pulse, because it's pretty good at taking mass out. Apparently, they're putting them in seat backs. They can take like 20% of the weight of a seat out. I don't know if anyone's ever picked up a seat in the car, but you'd be amazed at how heavy
those
things are.
They just put them in the board at Lear, so I'll have to get into this Dow stuff.
You're still on the board?
Yeah, just a week ago.
Well, here, go tell the board.
I was just with Rossiter the other day.
No kidding. Well, you know, Dow's especially selling this for seat backs. And again, you can reach that. If you want to get more information, go to DowBetaMate.com. Look for the section that they call Health and Safety, and then just click on where it says Pulse, and you can get everything that you
And you said
you
they're working
there.
on a particulate filter from...
They have a diesel particulate filter that Audi is using. Audi and Peugeot used it, too, didn't they, in their Le Mans cars, Peter? They ran diesels.
But what about the beer filtration?
It's a way of... I can't read that. It's a way of... it's some sort of tube that they can suck stuff through, and it came out of beer filtration, and they use that for capturing particulates.
Interesting. One of the companies I'm chairman of, Eagle Pitcher, has a diatomaceous earth mining company, and that's what you use to filter beer. And it's a, you know, it's a natural substance you dig out of the ground. It's white. It's diatomaceous earth.
I wonder if it's related.
It has a high surface to volume, so maybe we got a new product here. Huh?
There you go. There you go. You're going to have
to
check it out.
The cost of making beer, is it?
I hope not.
Better not. Speaking of which, do you want one? Okay. So what did you like at the auto show this week, David?
First off, it was a much better show than last year.
Be hard.
But I mean, not just in terms of the cars, but also in terms of the mood. It was a pretty maudlin affair last year. Let's see. You know, I do like the Focus a lot. We're talking about production cars right now, like the A8 quite a bit. I thought the XTS Platinum from Cadillac.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier.
That was my pick for the show. I think it was the best.
Peter and I said the same thing, right?
And Tom Stevens told me in an interview that that car is as close to the production XTS that we're going to see in, I think, 2012 or thereabouts, as the Camaro concept at the auto show a few years ago is to the
which
current
Camaro.
Which means
awfully damn close.
Yeah,
which
is
that's good.
Pretty much right on the money. There are probably a few things in the jewelry of the front end that they might not do, but
the jewelry in the front end, that grill, it looks like it's some sort of machined aluminum
probably
or something. probably is, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing I think you might not see, but it's still a great-looking car. I like the Chevy VORS a lot. I thought that looked really cool.
Listen to you. GM.
Hey, did you like that granite?
I think their design is really... The granite I liked, but in fact, I'll have something on the web with my picks and pants in the show pretty soon. But I like the look of the granite, but it's also fourth to the party for the small, boxy, you know, youth-oriented SUV. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've already got the Scion XB, mm-hmm. and you've got the
Kia Soul.
Kia Soul and the Nissan Cube, and now comes GM. It's a little late for that theme. They executed it really well, and
see,
it won a design.
I don't see it in the same genre as that. I know everybody said that. Oh, it's their Scion XB.
I don't either.
I see it much more upscale. Yeah. I see it much more sophisticated. Yeah, I don't see it aimed at a youth group at all.
I don't think it's aimed at the same customer, but that theme's already out on the road is what I'm saying.
So okay.
I think GM proved what I've been saying for years, and that their design is second to none, their talent, their capability. But at the same time, I remain absolutely convinced that they do not have a clue how to market what they have.
No, I don't think so either.
And here we got the granite up on the screen right now.
And I think until they solve that and the rumblings about the CEOs they're talking to, I don't know. I think GM has the talent, the product, the engineering, the design. But the rest of it is...
A mistake they're making right now. And I don't know that there's an easy solution for it, but they've got to name a CEO soon, because the more the business news stays on the front page, the harder it is to put their cars and what they're selling and the cool stuff in the media. I mean, you know, even if unless Whitaker runs it himself for a while and does an excellent job and things start to turn around, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm not buying that, so they need to get a CEO because he's
They just need to get the big business news off the front page so they can really start
good
to cut
point,
through the
yeah.
clutter.
Get to the car.
Yeah, start talking about the cars. But other stuff I liked, the CRZ style.
The
Honda hybrid. But 38 mpg, I mean, their hybrid system's just not cutting it.
Well, you know, I was surprised because I'm with you.
Performance,
a lot of people just came up to me unprompted just to tell me how much they hated the CRZ styling.
Well, you saw what I wrote.
Yeah, I was surprised.
You saw what I wrote about it. I mean, they butchered the front end. The problem is the concept was so good. They showed it too long. Then they translate into production. It's just like, oh, really?
And to David's point, you know, I saw that. Oh, here's a little hybrid. It's going to get spectacular fuel economy.
It's tiny. Yeah.
It does not. It gets 36, 39.
Are the old CRX that it's based on, that it's conceptually based off of, got over 50.
Right.
Now, it was a different era. I get all of that. But
right.
you can't get something that you're marketing basically to old CRV lovers.
Yeah. Oh, and it's going to be more expensive than the Insight.
The
Honda sent, I'm on their list for consumers, they sent this CRZ thing out, and the comments on their CRZ were about 95 against.
Wow.
95% against.
Well, and here we've got it up there on the screen. Ben's got it up.
It's a real good-looking car. But
It's okay looking from about halfway back, but the front end, they missed it.
Well, I was surprised to see that it's going to be more expensive than the Honda Insight. I just immediately assumed, because it's a smaller two-seater car, it's going to be less costly.
Although CRXs were not that cheap, as I recall. And I was
right.
The original concept they showed in that beautiful Honda racing white was so nicely done, so nicely rendered, and this is just...
Hey, you know what else I liked? And people are going to pillory me for this, but... I liked the Chrysler Lancia.
The Lancia Delta?
I thought it looked, yeah, the Lancia Delta, the Chrysler Delta.
Chrysler.
Basically, it's a Lancia Delta with a Chrysler front clip. That looked pretty good.
I think that it would sell right now if they could get them in the showrooms.
And it's not just because they had these, you know, ridiculously scantily clad models all over their stand. I mean, the Italians have taken over Chrysler.
Well, the biggest disconnect was you're stumbling around Chrysler, and you see the Ferrari, Maserati. It's just... They need to not repeat that.
Separate them.
Yeah, they need to not do that.
Volkswagen doesn't have Bentleys and Lamborghinis hanging off the Volkswagen.
Yeah, they need to get off that, because that was a big disconnect. Yeah, they flew in the babes from Europe. That was good. But that cannot continue, because that's just a major disconnect.
Mm-hmm. But I'm with David, and here we got it up on the screen, too, is... I thought that they should have held a press conference, which they did not. But this is one of the things that they could talk about. My only question is, are they really going to do this one?
Well, you saw what I read in the site. It's kind of sort of what we're thinking. Yeah. And come on, guys.
I interviewed Olivier Francois, who's the head of Chrysler brand, about it, and basically it was sort of a conceptual concept, if you will, where if we're marrying up Chrysler and launch a brand, in the roundtable with the reporters, Sergio Marchionne, the CEO, said that they're going to have a common destiny, the two brands, and it was sort of that exercise. What I think they will do, because the launch of Delta is 4 or 5 years old, I think. I'm not an expert on the launch of product line, unfortunately, because I think it sells in 3 countries. But
and not very well at that.
What they could do is the next gen Delta. They could do this. And it would be a nice upscale, if you're really going to take Chrysler brand upscale, it would be a nice upscale replacement for the PT Cruiser, because it's kind of a similar configuration, four-door hatch. And, you know, now, look, the next snap here for everybody on this is you're going to take upscale European cars with the launch of design flair and all of that, a very, you know, not just European, but Mediterranean. And you're going to market them in a brand and at dealerships that have sold very American statements like minivans, Chrysler 300s, and PT Cruisers, which are based off of a 30s Ford truck, right? So, you know, very American statement right now, although there's no common theme for Chrysler. It's sort of a clean canvas in some ways. And then you're going to go totally Euro. Yeah, that's a real market challenge.
Yeah, but that's what the whole market's doing. Look at Ford with the Fiesta and the Fusion. I mean, or not the Fusion, the Focus. Very European.
Oh, it can be done.
And I think those things will be red hot.
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I think the cars are great. The pricing's awfully high.
Well, give it a few years,
and
everybody, we've been talking about this for a while. Car
prices
are going up.
How about BYD saying they're going to be in this country with the electric car?
This year.
I put on the site that it's more likely that Fuking Motors will appear at the Detroit Auto Show next January as that's going to happen.
Well, three things BYD said. We're going to be in California with an electric car this year. We're going to be number one in China in 2015 and number one in the world in 2025.
Yeah,
I don't believe any one of those three. And, you know, now I'm starting to wonder, is Warren Buffett that smart? I mean, he's the guy who poured all the money into that company.
Of it, right?
Yeah.
He
does have 10% of the company.
You know, there are a lot of people getting involved in the car business of late that really don't know what they're doing.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Well, it's a great business. It'll shake out, and so we'll see.
Hey, I think it's time to do rapid fire.
They're already. I guess I really was late.
Yeah. Ben, can we get the graphic up? Okay, it's time for rapid fire. Pedro Fernandez, our buddy, asks, in your opinion, will making better vehicles be enough to get the Detroit 3 out of their misery, or has the perception damage been too much to overcome overnight? I personally need to wait for long-term reliability results.
I don't think it's, at least with GM and Ford, quality is the issue. I mean, GM can certainly do better than they are, but it's not like they need to prove out over another 5 years that their quality is good. They need to get people to look at these brands, and they could, because they're just lousy at marketing.
What do you think, Don? I mean,
yeah, I agree. I think the quality issues, in my mind, sort of off the table. I think you know, people don't have a long memory on stuff. Everyone's got quality products. I think it's hard to buy a bad car, so to speak. So you know, I think if Detroit, you know, GM, Ford, whatever, keeps working on the product more, I would like to see, frankly, more creativity in the design and the technical side.
Amen.
Of it.
I think
there's just too
we've been
much,
on that bandwagon.
There's just too much sameness out there. Everybody has a Toyota Corolla. Everybody has a Toyota Camry. And they all look more or less the same, and underneath they're not all that different. So it just strikes me they should, you know, let it hang out more. Not crazy stuff, but more creativity on the design.
Okay, that bing, 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 and the tick, 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 that was like, move it, brother.
Enough.
Okay, Jeff W. from Albany, New York says, Chrysler's taken a lot of abuse and deservedly so, but what about Honda? He says, I didn't see anything noteworthy from them, and the new CRZ is ugly in my book. Just what we were talking about. Did anybody else on the AAH panel see anything interesting from Honda?
No, I blasted Honda. I think their design is atrocious, and their Acura thing is a complete joke. the Acura design is a disaster.
I totally agree.
They need to fire everybody and start over before they lose all the accrued goodwill they've had with their loyal customers. And I like Hondas, you know, and I
admire the company.
Yeah, because it's, they don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, they race, they do cool stuff, but boy. Yeah,
great engines.
I'm with you. I'm scratching my head over Honda right now because a couple years ago at the show, they told us that they were going diesel for anything bigger than the Civic. Well, now they canceled that, and they're canceling F1 and other things so that they can make a hybrid system that's better for larger vehicles. They've done an about-face on that. The Insight's getting killed, and I don't think the CR-Z is
They've lost their mojo, and the latest CEO is saying, well, we're just going to focus on efficiency now. I mean, so they're in trouble in my estimation.
I was enthusiastic about them bringing out a diesel. I thought here'd be just a phenomenal diesel.
I thought it was going to turn the
best engine guys in the world, and just
okay. There's the ding, 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 because I could jump in with stuff to say too. But our pal Joe Philippi says had to miss NAIAS 2010 bummer. And Joe, it's no longer NAIAS. We're Detroit Auto Show. Or Detroit. He says he's concerned a bit about the XTS, though I love the exterior and the interior for the most part. Number one, he says the 111-inch wheelbase is not enough. 7 Series is at 120, the S-Class at 124. He says he's not so sure about this black front IP weird stuff.
You better get used to that, because that OLED stuff is the next wave. I wouldn't be surprised if the car debuts with a longer wheelbase than they showed in Detroit.
I could also see it have a much more conventional instrument cluster than what they showed to those screens.
Although, I don't know, Ford's... on the MKX, they showed their preview, their advanced.
They're doing some pretty good stuff.
Screen, so I think that's where we're going. It's lighter. It's
My guess is here that let me put it this way: if they're smart, they'll do what it takes to get this length XTS to market as fast as they can. It needs to be here quicker than 2012, and then later do a long wheelbase version like Audi does with the A8 and the A8L.
Okay, Bad Nickel from Twitter asks, what car from the Detroit Auto Show, no more NAIAS, will the everyman want and afford? And if anyone says anything electric, kick them off the set, John.
What car would everyman want? New Sonata.
New Sonata's terrific.
It's sensational. I spent a lot of time with that car, and I was just really wool.
But if you're looking for something every man can afford, I was impressed. Ford saying the new Fiesta, which I've driven. I like the car.
Yeah.
$13,900 is what it's starting at, and these days that's pretty good.
Fiesta sensational.
You can load that up, and it can cost you $23,000.
No, I believe that. But I mean, I'm guessing if it starts at 13.9 for about 15.5 or so, you'll get a very nice car.
Right against the Honda Fit.
Right.
Yeah, I would go right there.
Another thing about the XTS, somebody saying it looks boring, telling you got to see it.
You got to see it in person.
Okay. You may hate it, but it's not boring.
No.
Okay, Jim460 says, after seeing a road test of the Fiat 500, it looks to be overhyped as another Chrysler-saving car. I'm sure one thing, unless gas hits $5 a gallon, I don't see it selling in the U.S. all that well.
It's not a Chrysler-saving car.
Marcioni said that, too.
Yeah, it's a niche car, and it's very cool. But
it'll bring people into the showrooms, and they may not buy the 500, but if they're in the showroom, they might buy something else.
Yeah, might buy something else.
Carol E. Grant, Jr. asks, I wondered, why do American and European automakers still make front-wheel drive cars? The best handling automobiles are rear or four-wheel drive?
It's a packaging decision.
Packaging. You get more
packaging, but it's
more utilization of space. Front-wheel drive cars are handled fine these days. I mean, there's been a lot of
better in snow, of course.
People like them in snow and so forth.
Well, the better packaging allows you to make a smaller car, less mass, better fuel economy.
Bigger cap.
I'm not sure. They handle a whole lot better than they did early on. I'm not sure I'd say they handled as well as a rear drive
car. Oh, no, I didn't say that. I'm saying they handle, they're competent handling cars and have been for years. So.
Especially for people who don't care about cars.
Yeah, exactly.
They're perfect.
Okay, PT asks, is there any news on wide-scale hiring of engineers at the Detroit automakers? I anticipate significant hiring with new year budgets. I've heard various comments that they're running very lean.
Marcioni said that they were hiring engineers because the technical capabilities had been depleted under private equity ownership, without being specific.
the three-headed dog guys, you mean?
Yeah. So they're hiring engineers, and he said that, and I have heard that GM is too, that they realize they cut too deep in the bad days and that they're starting to bring some talent in again as well.
And, you know, everybody's hiring in the new technologies. They've hired a lot of battery and electric people, too, electric vehicle people, mm-hmm. with those capabilities. And I hear suppliers are probably going to be hiring some, too. But when you say wide-scale hiring,
it's going to be
I think businessmen have learned how to run more lean. And I think it'll be slow on the way up on hiring. You're gonna be, you know, relying more on math, more on simulations. You're going to be, I think, going through a tough time of downsizing, which is always a wicked thing to do. And I think they'll be slow to bring on a lot.
Okay, George from Brooklyn, and I'm sure he doesn't mean Brooklyn, Michigan, wants to know what other Fiats than the 500 will come to the U.S.?
Other Fiats what?
What other Fiats other than the 500 will come here?
Well, they've talked about a couple of Alfa Romeos. They haven't talked about any other Fiat.
No, they haven't talked about any other Fiats.
No, but I think we can make some pretty good guesses here. You know, I think if the Ford Transit Connect sells even reasonably well, Fiat's got a new comparable model called the Doblo. I would imagine that would be in here. I think the Linea is a sedan that they're talking about bringing over here as well.
What's the really cool Alfa? Is it the 8C?
The 8C.
Competizione.
Yeah, that's about $250,000.
You can get that here.
I'm just saying, you know, what
you
would
can
be
get
really
that
cool?
Here now. Well, there were 200 of them. There are 200 of coupes, and now there's 300 spiders of that.
Uh-huh.
You can buy them now.
Yeah. Well, Alfa's a natural to bring here.
You got $300,000.
Let's see here. Will the new plug-in Prius use a version of the current HSD tech, or is it different? I'm not sure what HSD is. Hybrid something?
Hybrid Synergy Drive.
Oh, Hybrid Synergy Drive, yeah. Will the new plug-in use a version of that? I got to believe it. It's all about getting costs down, and the more volume you can use of the certain technology, the cheap. Yeah, it's got to be.
I think so. Yeah.
By the way, that concept they showed was really good, I thought.
Of the plug-in. Oh, no, the little...
The green thing.
FTCH,
yeah,
I think it is.
The green thing was
FTCH was good. Was very good. I liked it a lot.
I mean,
finally, a dedicated hybrid that isn't shaped like an egg.
Right.
It was very good.
In fact, that was sort of the war, as I saw it at this show, between Honda and Toyota. Honda with the CRZ, its little hybrid. Toyota with its FTCH, I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah, but that was a concept, whereas Honda was production.
Correct.
You know, I think one of the problems with the hybrid market is they're either just hybrid versions of existing cars, typically family sedans that don't generate a lot of excitement. And then the Insight and the Prius are egg-shaped. They're geeky science project-looking cars, even though we've seen them for quite a while. To people who are interested in other kinds of cars and not making a green statement, these cars don't have a lot of appeal. That's why they aren't hitting the mass market.
Yeah, they're not important yet.
Here's Espo with a great comment. He says, with GM and Ford now using direct injection engines and six-speed automatics in their mainstream cars, he says, nothing said that the foreign competition is not using this. He says, I'm sure if it was the other way around, that's all we'd read about. You know, that Detroit, oh, they're behind the times again. And he says he thinks it's about time Detroit gets its fair shake. I would say DI... DCT and turbo is something that Audi and VW got into before anybody else. But I think he's got a good point here. We're starting to see a lot more direct injection and six speeds from the domestic competition that even Toyota and Honda aren't at. And it's a great point. If it were the other way around, the media would be all over GM and Ford for being the laggards again.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue for a long time to come. I'm afraid.
Jim Haynes asks, how will the Volkswagen Suzuki deal change the absolute failure of Suzuki America to be able to sell more than three cars a month?
I don't think it'll affect here. It's for the Far East where they because Volkswagen's nowhere in India, and
right.
They're going to try
my story today.
Yeah, they're going to try to leverage that. And David wrote a nice story about Volkswagen. But it's not going to really affect here much.
No, that's about, I think getting...
India play primarily.
Yeah. It's an India and Southeast Asia play for Volkswagen, and I think maybe Suzuki wants some diesel technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, he raises a good point.
And parts scale.
So. Suzuki only sells small cars, and, boy, they had a terrible month last month. Their sales were off 50%, and I don't get it.
They're done in this
I thought market. Everybody was going to small cars, no?
Yeah.
But what's Suzuki's market image in this market? I mean,
just they haven't cracked the code in the American market.
Dave Kiley and I were driving back from some media event once, and we saw someone driving a Suzuki Esteem wagon. And I go, there's the guy. And Dave said, we got to pull over and we got to ask this guy, why did you sneak out in this car and buy it? Like, we had to know why they would buy that car.
Okay, Porsche Girl asked, do you think it was a mistake that Ford did not have any concept cars? And I'll fill in the blank at this year's auto show, Detroit Auto Show.
No, I don't think so. Ford is all about their production stuff right now, and they wanted to focus on that, no pun intended. So, but we'll see concepts from them next year. They've got production stuff that they've got to sell, so I think
they might be doing it smart because everybody else is showing their cars for 3 years before they, you know, they even get.
Yeah, Fiesta's in showrooms in late May. The new Mustang with that nice V8, boy, that's a cool motor too. The 5-liter, that's going to be in April.
Yep.
The MKX is this summer. The new Edge is this summer. Then followed by the Focus a little over a year from now. So yeah, I think they were smart in doing that.
LK asks, with such little emphasis on Mercury, do you gents think it's going the way of Olds and Pontiac? Great question. Because Ford made a big deal about this new interconnectivity in its cars that they call My Ford Touch. The next day they did the big thing about Lincoln, My Lincoln Touch. We never heard any My Mercury Touch at all. So, and there was no emphasis on Mercury whatsoever. There was no intro of nothing of Mercury. It was only Ford and Lincoln.
Now, this question was asked of CEO Alan Mulally at the Ford dinner on Monday night, and he said that, you know, it's sort of an essential volume car for, you know, between Ford and Lincoln. I don't necessarily buy that part, but I think it is an essential volume car for the Lincoln dealers.
For the dealers, yes.
Yeah. And I don't think it costs them that much to run the brand.
This question has been asked for the last 10 years.
Yeah. At least. I mean, for,
you know,
people ask the same question of Buick, and GM source told me that Buick makes money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're investing in Buick. I don't see them investing in Mercury at all.
What is a Mercury? It's a Ford with a front clip and different color materials on the dashboard. I mean, I'd kill it myself, but I don't think it costs them that much money to do it.
Jay Cujo asked, Don, this is probably for you. Why did GM kill the Grand National? Was it Chevy, sales, or just ridiculousness?
Well, having been the father of it, I guess it's just ridiculousness. So, that was a great car. Project,
I mean, you created a cult car with that thing.
Still, it looks terrific when I saw some the other day, and the GNX.
So why did they kill it?
I have no idea. I mean, probably just not enough people buying it.
Okay, PTS, Mr. Runkle, how are the engine out hydrocarbon emissions? And I'm sure he's talking about your OPOC engine.
Yeah, right now the measured data we have on the stuff is it looks comparable to what we're seeing in four strokes. So, you know, what's important is you can't be too clean, so you just need to be whatever the laws are for, you know, 10 through the next decade.
Mud Monster wants to know, what kind of fuels can the engine use?
We have a diesel version, we have a gasoline version, and then obviously it'll run on any other fuel that it turns
ethanol on. Or natural gas or any of that.
We call it a flex fuel engine, so it would run on that. But
could it run on natural gas?
Oh, yeah, you run on natural gas. So it's a reciprocating internal combustion engine. And, you know, we're big fans of liquid fuels because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, liquid fuels, whether it be gas or diesel, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 times more energy and 100 times more power than chemical fuels like in batteries. So to match the sort of power density that is in liquid fuels is just virtually impossible.
Can it run on leftover fast food grease like those people?
Yeah, we could run on that. We're not spending a lot of time.
You hit on a key thing, and I totally agree with you. Liquid fuel is the way to go.
Yeah, when you look at transporting energy around the world, I mean, the grid moves a lot around, but, man, we pipe and truck lots of energy around that. And you can pull a dozen internal combustion cars up to a gas station and refuel them all in 2 minutes and be on your way. There's no way to pull a dozen electric cars up and refuel them because there's not enough electricity actually going into the gas station. So it'll be a while before it's mass there.
Well, you know, and it really comes down to energy density, just right? And it's just hard to beat a liquid when you're talking energy.
Those hydrocarbon bonds in liquid fuels have just got enormous energy in them.
Isn't our gas and diesel something like 8 to 10 times more energy dense than the best batteries right now?
No, it's 100.
It's 100 times?
100 times.
Wow.
It's 100. When you look, we always plot it on a log scale. When you look at it, I mean, you can't even see gas and diesel. It's so far off. And
Tom Stevens showed me this chart. For some reason, I had 10 in my brain.
No, it's 100 times. Yeah, when you look at, you know, lead acid started out, and then there was nickel cad, and then there was nickel metal hydride, and now lithium ion. And then when you apply gasoline, it's 100 times more. So, I mean, if you would have started the other way, you know, and said, okay, we're driving electric cars, and that is the way to go. And then somebody would bring in gasoline and show you gasoline. You'd say, it's over. You know, it's just too much energy.
So. Memo to Warren, you better hedge your bet on BYD and the whole electric craze.
Yeah. I keep saying, I think electric's a great technology. I think it should be pursued, but don't buy the hype and beware how much you invest in it.
Yeah, I mean, I was a co-founder of the United States Advanced Battery Consortium with Mike Davis at Department of Energy, and we were trying to do what has been, by and large, successful, put a lot more money and a lot more R&D into batteries, and that... You know, that was one of the original funders in A123, one of the original funders in NR1, and some of the guys that are, you know, now out there. And it was trying to basically solve, we needed, after the EV1, we had a lead-acid battery. That was sort of mostly what was available at the time. And, just not enough range and stuff like that. So I'm a big fan of electric cars, but they need to keep going and keep pushing the envelope on that. But 100 times is tough. Tough to overcome that.
Hey, we're at the top of the hour. We ought to wrap this up. But Don Runkel, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure. It's a lot of fun
having you here. And David Welch, even though you came in late, always good having you here.
Glad to be here, John.
And Peter, Mr. Renzo, Mr. Auto Extremist, as always, great having you here.
Good.
Hey, I want to remind everybody you can follow us at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. Follow us at Twitter at twitter.com/AutoLine. Always follow Peter at AutoExtremist.com. You can find David Welch at BusinessWeek.com and the AutoBeat blog.
Hey, you can find us at EcoMotors.com.
EcoMotors.com. There you go.
All right. John, good show.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Dow Automotive Systems for their support of AutoLine After Hours. Visit www.dowbetamate.com to learn more about how Betamate is reducing vehicle weight and enhancing durability. That's dowbetamate.com. Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there, and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.